This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. It was 75 years ago today, shortly after midnight, June 6th, 1944. More than 13,000 Allied paratroopers dropped into Nazi-occupied France behind the beaches of Normandy. And that's where they secured bridges and exit ramps from the beaches, providing tactical support for Allied troops that would hit the Normandy beaches that morning. It's a date we now know as D-Day. And let's talk about how we're commemorating it today. Joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss the importance of the Normandy invasion and the events commemorating the 75th anniversary of D-Day, our National Museum of the U.S. Air Force curator, Jeff Duford. Welcome, Jeff.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks.
Marie Engelvant, 3D modeler and texture artist with Histoverie, the French company that created a fully interactive augmented reality, or AR, experience exhibit that focuses on the American airborne missions on D-Day. Welcome, Marie.
Hi, thanks.
And Air Force Museum Foundation Executive Director Mike Imhoff. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So it's been 75 years since this event. Jeff, as the history guy, put this in context for us. So what exactly are we remembering today?
Well, we're remembering the largest amphibious invasion in human history. But more importantly, we are commemorating the beginning of the end of the evil Nazi regime and the end of the war in Europe.
Put that into context for us. I mean, this was a very large operation. You referenced that it was the largest amphibious operation. We hear about storming the beaches at Normandy. What did it look like? How can we visualize today what that looked like?
Every part of this operation was colossal, and I think it's worthwhile to kind of throw out some numbers, which were staggering. There were more than 5,000 ships that were involved in the amphibious invasion. More than 13,000 aircraft flew on D-Day, June 6th, and there were more than 150,000 troops that hit the beachhead on D-Day. And, you know, this is a time when they don't have computers, they don't have the technology we have today. Everything that was done was analog. It literally took years to build up to get to the point that they could invade France, to liberate France. They had to do all of this without the technology we have today, the automation that's done. It was all done essentially by hand. And I think something that's very important about D-Day, too, is that the success of this operation was essential to ending the war in Europe. But it was not guaranteed. And in fact, General Eisenhower, who led Allied forces on D-Day, actually had a handwritten note that he had put together in case the invasion failed, you know, what he would say. So we look back today and we see this incredibly successful mission, this successful invasion, and yet it wasn't a guaranteed outcome.
So with that uncertainty in mind, what would have been the consequences had it not succeeded?
It would have been catastrophic. The post-war world would have been entirely different. Because the Allies landed in Normandy and ultimately defeated the Nazi regime, it took a lot of pressure off the Soviets on the Eastern Front. But had the war been successful, even without the invasion, I think that Europe would have been a very different place rather than divided in half as it was between the West and between the Soviet sphere. It would have been very, very different.
And Mike, as the executive director of the Air Force Museum Foundation, what are some of the ways that the organization is honoring and recognizing the significance of this date?
So we at the foundation, our mission is to raise funds and awareness to support Dave Tillotson, the executive director, the director of the National Museum of the United States Air Force. So a few things we're doing. One, the exhibit that we've brought to the visitors to the museum. It's a 3,600-square-foot augmented reality-based endeavor. It really focuses in on, Jeff talked about D-Day, but on one of the aspects, and that's the application of air power. So think of it this way, 820-plus C-47s came over in the early morning hours of D-Day and dropped 13,000 paratroopers in and amongst the French countryside behind the D-Day beaches. And this exhibit allows you to experience in an immersive, connective way what it was really like for these paratroopers to first load up and then fly across the channel, land, have to secure their objectives, and then fight and break out of D-Day. In addition, the folks at Histoverie have really enabled us to show what it was like to be a French citizen in France on June 5th. So what it was like to live under German occupation. So you can really appreciate what the sacrifices of our young men meant to the folks in France as we were able to land, secure the beachheads, and then break out, and ultimately which led to the end of the war.
Marie, this sounds like a pretty substantial display. So you're with Histoverie, the company that put this on. What exactly happens for someone who's participating in this?
So the way our exhibit works, it's an augmented reality exhibit. Each visitor with their ticket gets a tablet that will allow them to experience 12 different immersive experiences that take them through before, during, and after D-Day, all centered around the French village of Sainte-Mère-Église. So with these tablets, the visitors scan what we call time portals, and then they can look around them almost as if the tablet was a window and see all around them a scene of the past as though they were standing in the middle of it. So these scenes, like Mike mentioned, we start off before D-Day, so looking at occupied France, looking at a briefing room where the troops would have gotten ready for the missions. We then proceed to take them through every step, so the paratroopers preparing themselves, the pathfinders preparing the landings for the paratroopers, and then, of course, the actual flight, the jumps onto the countryside of Normandy, the battles that ensued afterwards, like the battle at Le Fier or the battle at Kellen Bridge, and then, of course, what happens after. So looking at a field hospital and where all of that led these soldiers.
How did you put this together?
So we worked with the Airborne Museum located at Sainte-Mère-Église. We worked with their collection and their historians to put together these 12 different scenes. Each time the historians would look over everything that was created. The visuals are created using 3D animation, so the same sort of technology that you would see used for video games or visual effects. And then all the text and historical information is brought together by historians from the museum as well as historians from Histoverie, who all collaborate to create this huge amount of historical knowledge that is put together in a way that's very immersive and that allows people to get very hands-on with the history.
How long does something like this take to create?
So the content took 9 months to make, and then the actual application, putting it on tablets, took another 3 months after that. The exhibit itself, which was custom made for the museum, took another 6 months to put together.
So is this an exhibit that travels around?
We hope so, yes.
So, but this is the debut?
Yes.
It is. Yep.
Okay, so Mike, how did you go about getting this to debut at your event?
So we partner with the museum, and for the last 4 or 5 years, we've recognized that on the global scale, augmented reality, virtual reality, it was an emerging technology. We premiered the first virtual reality spacewalk in all of North America, and that opened up with the fourth building grand opening in 2016. But we knew augmented reality was really taking off, especially in Europe. So happenstance, I happened to be in France last year. I was in a chateau in the Loire Valley. I'm a museum guy. Well, I'll just glob on with this big tour group. There's 400 fireplaces, this place, big place. Small problem, I don't speak French. So I noticed there was some tech behind me. And for €6.50, I grabbed a Histoverie pad, and it gave me a tour. But more importantly, at one point, I noticed there was a scope on the tablet. And it actually allowed me to see what the chateau was like in 1545. It had sound. It had narrative. It allowed me to take away the history of the chateau in ways that I could never have experienced otherwise. So when I got back to the States, once business was concluded, mid-December, early January, I reached out to the CEO of Histoverie and said, hey, here's who we are. And we think there may be a partnership. We knew nothing about the Airborne Museum. It was just I had held this technology in my hand. It was augmented reality. We saw a potential partnership long term. And he said, hey, we've got this thing going on. And literally 2 months later, we had a contract. And 10 weeks after that, it was in our museum.
What do you think will be gained by visitors through this process, through this display, this exhibit, that wouldn't otherwise be available in terms of their feelings and their understandings of the events?
I'll give you a couple of thoughts from observations. One, we thought it was going to be for the kids. We thought, wow, these kids are really going to get into this. It's going to make history come alive, and their parents won't have to drag them kicking and screaming around a museum. But what we've really saw is that it's an enabler. because the 90-year-olds, it's so intuitive, they can connect with this technology. So you see the grandmothers, the grandfathers in with the children in this exhibit, and they're having a conversation they wouldn't have had otherwise about our freedom, about what it means to go fight for our country, about what these young men experience in D-Day. It really is eye-opening. The other is the educational piece. And that last week we had a group of students, 40 of them, and their teacher come through the exhibit. And afterwards he pulled us aside and he said, you know, I've been doing this for 40 years. And every museum I go to, it's the same thing. About 20 minutes in is about all I'm going to get. Then they check out. But they didn't do it this time. They stayed connected. And afterwards, when we went back to the classrooms, they were engaged, they were connected, and they wanted to know more because of this capability, this experience. So I think it's certainly going to reach out to the younger audience. You heard Marie talk about, you know, the 3D simulation, et cetera. It's immersive and all of that. And I think that's important. But it's really going to connect in ways we have never thought of before. And it's really going to take with Dave Tillotson, Jeff DeFord, and their amazing team does at the museum and just take that game to the next level.
We'll continue our discussion on this 75th anniversary of D-Day just ahead with our panel. And also, a little bit later, I'm going to be talking on the phone with a man who was there. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. Continue now with our discussion about D-Day here on the 75th anniversary of this monumental occasion in American and international history. I'm joined today by National Museum of the U.S. Air Force curator Jeff DeFord, Marie Angouvant. She's the 3D modeler and texture artist with Histovery. That's a French company that created a fully interactive augmented reality or AR experience that focuses on the American airborne missions on D-Day. It's a really cool experience. And Air Force Museum Foundation Executive Director Mike Imhoff. Glad you could all stick around to continue our conversation. Jeff, I'd like to get a little bit more into the history of D-Day and the significance and its lasting legacy on international history. What did this date mean for America's role in the world?
Well, I think it is definitely a signal moment of America taking leadership. And for us in the U.S. Air Force, it's also a very momentous occasion for the history of the U.S. Air Force. In fact, a lot of the public acknowledgement or understanding of D-Day is this invasion coming from ships, you know, the ramps coming down and troops storming the beaches. But actually, D-Day could never have taken place without air power. And in fact, the foundation for the success of the invasion was laid in the skies over Germany by Army Air Force's heavy bomber crews, who died literally by the thousands to break the back of the German Air Force. You know, earlier in the war, the Germans didn't invade England because they didn't break the back of the Royal Air Force. Well, the Allies had the same problem. And the way that the Allies were able to essentially defeat the Luftwaffe of the German Air Force was with the heavy bomber campaign over Germany. And in fact, about 2,000 German fighter pilots were killed in the first 5 months of 1944. And between that and the Army Air Force's bombing French airfields that could potentially threaten the invasion, the German Air Force was essentially nowhere to be found on June 6th. So for the U.S. Air Force, D-Day was a very important part of the reason why the Air Force became a separate service after the war. During the war, the Army Air Forces was part of the Army. The Air Force didn't become a separate service until 1947. So not only for the nation, but for the U.S. Air Force, which of course were the Air Force's National Museum, this is a critical moment in our history.
When we talk about these numbers, these massive numbers of men that were storming the beaches at Normandy or parachuting from the sky, it's hard to think about now, but these are young men. These are very young warriors going into this battle. Talk a little bit about who these people were. I mean, just Americans who were 18, 19, 20 years old.
You know, you make an absolutely fantastic point. You know, the experience that those young men went through is so utterly foreign to our experience today. They were in their late teens, early 20s, And the fact that they were everyday Americans, some who'd volunteered, some who had drafted. You know, the U.S. had 15 million people in uniform during the war. These are people essentially just like you and I, of course, much younger. But they were thrust into this place because of world events, and they did their duty, and some of them gave their lives in order to defeat the evil Nazi regime. And I think that just amplifies our obligation to remember what these young people did so long ago. We live a better life because they left their homes, they left their families, they left their homeland to put their lives on the line, and in some cases gave their lives in order that ultimately we have a better life today.
And we remember them now 75 years later to the day that D-Day took place. I know we want to chat a little bit more about the events going on today. And if you want to tell us a little bit more about what's happening.
Yeah, there's some amazing things happening at the museum today. We'll have two C-47s, one of which actually flew and dropped paratroopers on D-Day over Normandy. They'll be flying over the museum. We will have reenactors roaming throughout the museum as airborne troopers, about 15 military vehicles. We have our Living History series tonight at 6:30 p.m., the movie Sunken Roads, 70 years after D-Day. There'll be D-Day veterans there who will be able to talk about what people are seeing on the screen. So, this is a wonderful way to meet that obligation of remembering those young men so many years ago to come out to the museum.
And Mike, this is the 75th anniversary. Was there any added pressure just from your standpoint in organizing any types of commemoration just because the significance we put around certain anniversaries?
No. You know, we're blessed each and every day to work with Jeff and an amazing team at the National Museum of the United States Air Force. And their motto is pretty simple. It's, we are the keepers of their stories. It is our duty to remember. The French, when they came over, saw that phrase and it literally stopped them in their tracks. Because whereas them, for them, it's a civic duty, as they explained it to us. For us, and what the museum does such an amazing job of, is when you come to the museum and you see these exhibits, whether you know it or not, that responsibility is conveyed now to you. So you are now responsible. You are now, it's your job to go out and keep the fading voices of the greatest generation, to keep those alive and vibrant for the next generation to hear, to understand, and as Jeff so aptly put, to honor. The French phrase is notre devoir de mémoire, right? Our duty to remember, our duty of memory. So there really was no added pressure. It was, this is what we do each and every day. We do it right. We do it well. And this is just another incredible example, and for all of the right reasons.
You said before we went to the break that you don't speak French. That sounded all right to me, I think.
Yeah, I've had a little bit of a practice here.
Well, I don't want to be flippant because this is a solemn occasion. We're remembering something that did result in a lot of people's deaths. But Marie, what your company has done is really cool with the augmented reality, the AR experience, to experience this day and this place in history so surreally. And I got to try it during our brief break, and I'm going to try another one now because you've got what is a tablet here, and I know it's going to be terrible radio, but we're going to move forward with basically jumping out of an airplane. Are we going to get the parachute experience, Marie?
Absolutely. So what we've done is we've worked with the historian at the Airborne Museum to recreate what these 16 paratroopers who jumped out of the airplane saw.
Okay, so you've got this tablet pulled up, and what am I going to see on there?
So what this will allow you to do is to click and to see the pathways of different paratroopers. So,
oh, wow. Okay, so different pathways, different parachuters.
Exactly, so I'm going to click on one of these here.
Okay, so there's different little icons that pop up on the screen, and you can click on them and then decide. And it looks like I'm descending towards a church.
Absolutely.
In real time, I imagine this must be similar to the pace that would have taken place. And then it shows me an image of Private First Class John M. Steele. And then you've got details on this gentleman.
Absolutely. So we were able to work with the historians there who actually found the names of all 16 of the gentlemen who came in. And we were able to tell their stories really on a very personal note to show people what it was like for each of these gentlemen and that they were real people who did this.
This is amazing because I've just clicked on another one and I guess I've been able to map his landing, and it's now Private Ernest R. Blanchard. You've got the image of where he's landed and then an actual picture of him and the medals that he earned. This is really fascinating and definitely worth a visit to the museum to experience that. I know that we can only describe it on the radio and audio terms, but it's certainly worth the visual experience. That was really moving. 75th anniversary of D-Day. I want to thank the National Museum of the U.S. Air Force curator Jeff Duford, Marie Engouvant from Histoverie, the French company that created this AR experience, and the Air Force Museum Foundation Executive Director Mike Imhoff. Thank you for coming and telling us a lot of interesting perspectives on this very important date.
A great pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now my conversation with James Pee-wee Martin. He was there at the scene during the D-Day invasion. He talked to us about his experience. Jim, it's been 75 years since what we now know as D-Day. What does D-Day mean to you all these years later?
Well, it means to me that I'm thankful that I'm still in my house and able to talk to people that I want to without somebody saying I can't do this or can't do that. World War II, without a doubt, changed the world. And if we had lost, this world would be a different place. And I would like to emphasize that although I was in a very high, dedicated unit, I did nothing extraordinary. None of us feel that. We just feel what we did and what we signed up for. And we're all thankful that we were able to do what we did.
How old were you on that day?
21.
When you're only 21 years old and you're dealing with something of that scale and a mission that would have that impact, what's going through your mind in the moments leading up to your drop from the plane?
Well, when I was going up in the plane, I wrote some letters to my parents about that. I said when we were going over and I looked down on that ocean, could just about walk on ships. There were so many ships down there. I knew that we were going to play a very important part in that. I had no doubt that we would prevail no matter what happened. But I did wonder what the price would be.
Did you think at all about death?
Well, everybody's asked me that. No, really, I didn't. And none of our people really did. We were pretty hopped up. We're going to kill everybody over there and all that sort of thing. We really had no reference point, so we didn't think much about death. As I stood in that door ready to go out, all those heavy caliber tracers, different colors, streaming up toward our ships. Bullets going in, and you could hear them hitting the ship and coming up through the wings and through the floor. All I could say was, I was just fascinated, absolutely fascinated by all of it, and I didn't give much thought to what was going to happen when we hit the ground.
How often would you say that this particular mission crosses your mind?
I don't think much about that time until people ask me about it. I think more about what's going on in the world today. But I also am very cognizant of the fact that what we did made a big difference. Now, every time I'm asked to speak on Memorial Day, and I think about it, and I tell people, I said, you know, you're here gathering give honor to people like me and the others that did what we did. But I said, you really don't know what some of those people went through. And I said, to give you an example, 8th Air Force, that unit lost more people than any other unit in the service. They lost 130,000 people. I said, you have no idea what they went through. In the first place, they were 10, 12 hours on oxygen. Believe me, that's tough to breathe oxygen with a mask that long. I said, there was no heat in those planes. When those bomb bay doors opened, the temperature was 40 below zero. Those guys had heated suits, but they often failed. Or if a gun jammed, they had to take their glove off and work on it. That temperature. Now, people in my unit, we lived like animals. Out in the weather, it didn't matter whether it was snowing or it was pouring down rain, or if you're in the summertime in high heat, you're behind German lines a lot. So you depended only on what you could carry yourself. And oftentimes we didn't have water for several days. We drank out of streams. We went without food many times. And we lived absolutely like animals. And surprisingly, nobody complained about that. We knew that's what we had to do. It didn't matter what we were up against. We were so hopped up that we felt we could do anything. Now stop to think of it. The people that they brought over to fight against my unit were German paratroopers who had been over fighting in Russia. These were professional people. They'd been fighting for years. And we were so egotistical that we're going to go defeat them. And today, I'm friends with some of those people. I know them well, talked to them, seen a few of them, been with them. People say to me, well, how could you be with them now when the atrocious things that they did? I said, let me tell you something. All through history, the people that won the wars wrote the books. They always said what the people on the other side did bad, but they never said anything about ours. And I said, let me tell you, we did things almost as bad as they did. But I have said then, and I said today, cannot hate people forever. We have to live with each other when this is over. And now I'm accepted all over Europe, and I say that all over Europe.
Jim, this has been 75 years ago. What do you think is important that people remember about D-Day and World War II in general?
Well, in D-Day, we knew how important this was. We're going to have a tough time. Now, there's another thing. We were brought up to respect life. Suddenly, we are getting medals for killing people. Funny thing is, nobody had a bit of problem transitioning from one to the other. We knew this was a necessity, and it didn't bother us. They said, well, how about when these guys next to you got killed? Don't you think about them now? Why, you were spared and they weren't? I said, not at all. I said, when they were killed, they're gone. Their families are the ones going to suffer forever. There's no closure for them or no end for them. But for those of us who went over there and went through all of this and came back in relatively good shape, it's the greatest experience you will have in your lifetime, and it will never happen like that again.
Jim, we thank you so much for taking some time and sharing these thoughts with us. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
I want to emphasize, I did nothing spectacular. Anybody else didn't do. We all did what we were supposed to.
Thanks again for your time, and thank you for what you've done.
You're most welcome. Thank you.
That was James Pee-wee Martin talking to me earlier on this 75th anniversary of D-Day. Up next, the world is smaller than ever. As the global economy grows larger, that has created more opportunities for international student exchange programs. But the benefits aren't just for the students. What families who play host to these traveling academics are also experiencing. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. I'm Michael Monks. Subscribe to our podcast at wvxu.org.